Good morning and welcome to the Citron Research conference call on Home Solutions of America. Today's call will be hosted by Citron editor Andrew Left. Before I turn the call over, it is important for all to know that Citron Research has assembled its research through available public information. Citron recommends that you do your own due diligence before buying or selling any security. At any time, the principals of Citron might hold a position in any of the securities profiled on the site. Citron will not report when a position is initiated or covered. Each investor must make that decision based on his or her judgment of the market. The principals of Citron Research are not registered investment advisors or chartered financial analysts. Before purchasing or selling a security, it is wise to first consult with a licensed stockbroker. Now I will turn the call over to Andrew Left, editor of Citron Research.
Welcome, everyone, to the first-ever conference call for Citron Research. My name is Andrew Left, and this month is the sixth year of me publishing Citron Research, formerly StockLemon.com. The reason for this call is to clear up any misconceptions about the recent state of affairs at Home Solutions of America. So I'll make my presentation brief so I'll have proper time to answer any questions that have been emailed to me over the past few days. So let's hop right into it. Home Solutions of America is a $250 million company that has three operating businesses: restoration, interior services, and construction. In analyzing the company, it would be foolish to start anyplace else except right in their own filings and the balance sheet. So I could sit here all day long and go down line item and show the red flags, but nobody wants to get bored. So I'm going to boil the whole balance sheet down to one word, the one word that both bulls and bears can agree on, the one word why everyone is on this conference call, and this word is the word cash. The cash of this company is currently slightly over $5 million. Home Solutions will end this quarter with a cash balance at a three-year low, while share count is at a three-year high. Everything else is a sideshow. Forget about receivables, EBITDA, net income, goodwill, or any other line on the balance sheet that can make a bull or a bear case. You have to stay focused on cash. But what's most frightening about the cash situation is that it's currently taking a direct toll on business. And with the current state of affairs in the economy, the company could face a tremendous cash crunch in the middle of a lending crisis. A key stat that we found startling is that the accounts payables are now at 95 days, which is up from 58 days just 1 year ago. So the stories of the contractors who have not been paid are many, and they extend from that recent article in the Tampa Bay Business Journal to the recent project in New Orleans that they were kicked off for not paying the contractors. The company does have a credit line that they already owe $30 million to a small regional bank. This credit line is based on receivables. At any time that the bank believes there's any fraud committed, the credit line can be revoked. And we'll go into that later on within the conference call. If this company is forced to repay a credit line and has issues with payables, then Chapter 11 is a reality. And when that happens, the signs are not always there. Today, just look at American Home Lending. Their lenders cut off their funding out of concerns, and in just days, the stock went from $10 to under a dollar. Wall Street could be a very cruel place if you don't have proper funding and you don't have proper disclosures. Remember, every financial institution in the country right now must be reviewing their portfolios with a microscope that deal with construction and home building. So that's what every investor has to ask themselves. Can this company hold up to scrutiny under a microscope? It's my opinion that when the company was putting out the aggressive and possibly fraudulent press releases a few months back, it was an attempt to go ahead and get the stock price higher in order to raise money, hence to quell the near-term needs of the company. Enter Rodman Renshaw, who, if you read on their disclosure issue on the current research report, states that the company, Rodman Renshaw, intends to seek investment banking services from Home Solutions of America within the next 3 months. So that alone should be a concern for shareholders. So now, when we're looking at Home Solutions of America, we cannot look at this company in a complete vacuum. It does exist in a larger economy. So let's look at the state of the economy and the effect on Home Solutions. What's amazing to me is that, and only proof that Home Solutions management is not being honest with investors, is how they shrug off the current state of the economy and its effect on their company. So the interior operating business of Home Solutions is going to have to guide lower, as we see as home builders have slammed on the brakes. The restoration business of Home Solutions might suffer a setback after the recent ruling in New Orleans that insurance companies don't have to pay for damage done by the levee breaking, which leaves them with government restoration work, which is a low-margin business that the company admitted themselves they want to get out of. And the last area of the business is the construction company, or building construction services. But for anyone who doesn't live in a cave, if you have a newspaper, if you turn on CNBC, you see that we're in the middle of a major lending crisis. It's a credit crunch. And this is when the company's choosing to enter the construction business. Lending is dried up and projects are being canceled throughout the country. Therefore, larger and more established builders will start working for lower margins and take on some projects just to keep employees. Just look at it this way. It's simple common sense. In the past 4 years, this country has witnessed the greatest construction boom of modern times and probably the worst flood season since Noah. And Home Solutions still cannot show positive cash flow earnings. So now let's talk about the favorite hot button, what seems to be the most controversial issue, which are the recent projects announcements in New York and Tampa. Again, let's just use common sense. We're supposed to believe that there's a contractor or someone who owns a piece of land in New York who can write a check for $100 million, who decides to go ahead and make a building. And who do they hire? They hire a restoration company out of Tampa, Florida. Are they licensed contractors in New York? No. Do they have history of building in New York? No. Do they have money for bonding? No, no, no. What makes them qualified? Was every other builder or construction management services in the tri-state area booked? Were they the only ones that can be hired? So that alone has to invite skepticism. Is there a project in Brooklyn being built? Yes. There's obviously a project somewhere in Brooklyn, the Green Condos, on their third contractor that's had some issues getting building permits that's being built. There's a sign on it for Blue Diamond Construction. Does that mean that Fireline has a $100 million contract? The answer is no. I invite anyone from Sanders Morris to the company to Rodman Renshaw to present a contract for $100 million or excess of $100 million that would show what the company is doing to deserve this money. And more importantly, who is on the other side of the contract? If the other side of the contract is Blue Diamond, I think we all can have questions whether or not Blue Diamond has $100 million to go ahead and pay Fireline. SEC Rule 10b-5 clearly makes it illegal to, quote, employ any device, scheme, or artifice to defraud, to make any untrue statement of material fact, or to omit the state of material fact necessary in order to make the statements made. There's nothing but material facts misstated in this. The company really has to put forth a contract for $100 million, what they're doing for it, why they're qualified for it, and more importantly, can it ever get paid? If not, this is fraud. As for the Tampa project, what's there to be said? Again, we're looking at in the middle of a crisis, lending crisis, Fireline, without any significant buildings, someone has given them, on the secret, a contract for $100 million for mixed-use space, retail, residential, and so on. As everyone knows, I couldn't find it. I searched high and low everywhere through Tampa. More importantly, if we've been reading, as I have, Carl Cronin at the Tampa Bay Business Journal, he is the real estate editor of the Tampa Bay Business Journal, and he still calls this a mystery project. For anyone who's been to Tampa, you cannot just hide a $100 million-plus dollar project without anyone knowing about it, most importantly, the real estate editor. He's called the company many times, according to his articles, and they've never responded back to him as to where the project is. Again, where's this contract? It's important. The company never filed an 8K on the Tampa project, and it leaves me to serious doubts that it's a fraudulent contract. The company must right now, for the sake of its investors, go ahead, put forth the contract. This is who's giving us $100 million in Tampa. And again, someone on the other side has to have the wherewithal to pay that $100 million. I personally do not believe it exists. I do not believe a valid contract is there. And again, I welcome Sanders, Rodman, the company, anyone involved to go ahead and defend the Tampa project. And it's not good enough saying, possibly I met with a developer, a project manager, I saw a parcel of land. No. Where is the contract? Very simple. So now that I've stated that case, I'm sure many people are saying, okay, Andrew, and this has been the most common criticism, why should we believe you? Am I short the stock? Yes, I am. But that's no reason to doubt what I say. Everyone in the stock right now has a conflict of interests. Sanders Moores has board seats, and numerous of their company personnel own stock or warrants in the company. CEO Cast, a major defender, is also one of the largest shareholders, owning around, 1.9 million shares of stock. And as I said earlier, Rodman Renshaw, who recently put out a report on them, stated in that disclosure that they intend to seek investment banking services within the next 3 months. So that alone shows an inherent conflict. My track record over the past 6 years is unmatched by any other short newsletter out there, and that includes listed securities. Let's look at one simple fact. My record against stocks recommended by Sanders Moores, Rodman Renshaw, and CEO Cast is I'm 3-0. And if you want to include Matrix Research, we can make that 4-0, and that does not include anything on Home Solutions of America. But if you don't want to believe me, and you say maybe we don't believe the company, all you have to do is believe the auditors, who have put a statement in the filings, which is everything but standard disclosure. When the auditors warn 19 times in 19 different places when talking about the controls of the company, there's more than a remote likelihood that a material misstatement of the interim and annual financial statements would not be prevented or detected. Or you get our favorite, which is when the auditor warned, management note that during the financial statement audit that some sales were recorded twice. Now, what should make this as a concern is that if possibly the people who loan the money to the company that's based on receivables, if they believe the receivables are not truly accountable, it puts the loan in jeopardy. And much like everything else, it's never a problem until it's a problem. So it might not be built into the stock, but when it does, and if it does, it might possibly be too late. So the key thing is to stay focused on the message and not the messenger. Whether a report is written in a boardroom on Wall Street or a classroom in Kansas, what's important is the content.
We have now entered the question and answer period. The following is a list of questions that have been sent in by readers over the past 4 days. Some of the questions have been modified to take out rude and offensive language, yet the context is intact. Why should we believe you with your background?
As I said, it's important to stay focused on the message and not the messenger. But let's clear a few issues up. In 1993, when I was 23 years old and fresh out of college, I entered a classified and found myself working for a commodity brokerage firm. I followed the script that I was given, and subsequently, I was sanctioned by the CFTC, something I'm not very proud of. I voluntarily left the business after being a commodity broker for about 1 year. I was never convicted of fraud, and I've never had a felony in my whole life. If anything, my infraction, you can call it, let's say small potatoes next to CEO Cast, who is the largest shareholder, one of the largest shareholders of the stock, whose mouthpiece is Michael Wax, and Mr. Wax did 11 months in a federal penitentiary for defrauding Chase Manhattan out of $20 million. and he's one of the largest shareholders. Or you get the whole Roy Marshall, or whether it be David Goldwasser. But again, all of that, whether it be my background, whether it be Mr. Wax, whether it be Goldwasser, it's all a sideshow if the company has a business. None of us are in line for the Supreme Court, but it really doesn't make a difference. Everyone should stay focused on the balance sheet and the business of the company.
How many times have you been sued and investigated by the SEC or companies you have targeted for your postings?
Okay. I've never been sued by the SEC. They know very well who I am and very well what I do. Much to the contrary, many subjects of my reports have been on the receiving end of many SEC investigations and SEC halts. As a matter of fact, this year alone, two CEOs of companies that I've published on have been indicted. I've been sued by individual companies four times. I have never lost one of them. Beyond that, everything's been won in summary judgment without ever going to trial, as I've always been able to prove that I write nothing but the truth. I invite the same scrutiny from Home Solutions of America. If they would choose to sue me, it would be fine. I would look forward to my day in court presenting what I have to back up everything that I've written. You see, as much as, yes, I'm a short seller, and yes, I'm aggressive, I just can't go out there and say what I want to say. If tomorrow I put out something as crazy as, let's say, Google was stealing money from investors, and hence the stock went down 30%, I think my last concern would be, is Google going to sue me? It's highly illegal, and there would be recourse. I wrote my first report on Home Solutions of America around 14 months ago. There's been no legal recourse because everything I've written is true.
How many shares are you short, and what hedge funds pay you for your postings?
As for how many shares I'm short, I won't disclose that. I'm legally not required to, and most importantly, in order to understand the impact of how many shares I'm short on my net worth, you'd have to know a net worth. Obviously, if someone's worth $20,000 and they're short 5,000 shares, it means a lot more than if someone's worth $20 million and they're short 50,000 shares. So whatever it may be, I'm not going to go ahead and I'm not going to write that. There's no reason for that. As for what hedge funds pay me, the answer is zero, none. I have never in 6 years ever received compensation in any form from any hedge fund for publishing any of my reports.
Why would the company lie? Don't they have too much to risk?
Why they would lie, I don't know. I mean, white-collar crime is a reality, hence the creation of Sarbanes-Oxley. I guess everyone would wonder why the people at Enron, WorldCom, or any of the other many corporate frauds would lie. It probably comes down to cash at the end of the day, and there's no recourse. Last year, they put out a press release, which probably was a lie, about CMB and the $30 to $40 million contract, and nothing ever came to fruition, and no one ever questioned it. So I guess you keep lying until you get caught. But probably money. I mean, at the end of the day, over the past 15 months, the net insider buy-sell, not adjusted for stock options, has insiders selling $11 million worth of stock. And that includes high salaries, corporate jets, related party companies that do consulting work. It excludes a company that goes ahead and has a culture that spends $9.5 million in SG&A expenses in a quarter. So to put that in perspective, assuming you have a seven-day work week, the company is spending close to $90,000 a day on a seven-day work week on a business that's filled with subcontractors. If you look at the class action suit, you'll see the company has a history of lying. Why they do that is probably a lesson in psychology that people have written about when studying white-collar crime. I do not know, but at the end of the day, it probably is to generate cash for themselves.
What is your opinion of naked short selling?
I think naked short selling is wrong. More importantly, naked short selling is illegal. Every share that I'm short, I have a legitimate borrow on, or I'm short the stock through an option. I won't even entertain any thought about naked short selling. It's illegal.
What happens if the company collects this receivable from FIGA?
Well, this seems to be one of the major bull cases I hear people saying to me is, what if they collect this money from FIGA? If they collect the money from FIGA, the money goes right into the pockets of Brian Marshall. It's $20-odd million right into his pockets. So basically, it comes off the line of receivable, and comes off the line of payable, and the company is no better than they were the day before. Ironically, the company could have already taken that payable off the books at the end of June and forced Brian Marshall to pay back interest to shareholders, but for some reason they didn't. So if one day in the future they happen to collect money from FIGA, it'll look nice for a headline for one day, but it's a complete wash on the balance sheet.
Why are you making this conference call before earnings? Are you afraid what the company has to say? And are you trying to push the stock price down before a good earnings quarter?
Whatever the company has to say is fine with me. My opinion on Home Solutions, it's not based on a trade, but rather an outlook for a company that's been hit with the perfect storm of bad news. The combination of low cash, these fake press releases, and most of all, entering into an industry that's faced its most challenging times in years. So I'm not concerned about the short-term forecast for the company. But most importantly, the reason why I did this before earnings and before the Home Solutions conference call is so investors will have a blueprint what questions to ask. As you notice, the questions that I'm answering, none of these are favorable questions to me. I actually entertain and I would like to have the challenging questions. It would be nice for the company to have the same welcoming of the challenging questions on their conference call. I think they owe it to shareholders, and that's why it's being done now. So we'll understand what to look for on Wednesday.
What do you think the stock is worth?
Well, I don't want to give any stock advice telling people it's definitely going here, it's definitely going there. But on my analysis of the company right now, the way it stands, the company doesn't seem, Home Solutions doesn't seem to have any inherent value. They have no recurring revenue. They have no unique technology. They're riddled with debt, and they're entering a field that they're not experienced or capitalized or ready to be in. I guess you could say on a bull case you have a backlog of work. But they have not shown that they're able to collect money from the backlog. They cannot show a provable margin from the backlog that's realistic. And most importantly, we don't actually know what the backlog is. We've seen a bunch of announcements, but we don't know the validity of it. So unless you can prove these, there's no transparency in the company. So right now, there's nothing to say they can't pull a rabbit out of a hat in the future, but I don't want to speculate on magic. So right now, as for an inherent value of the company, if you look at the debt and you compare it to cash and you look at the payables and you look at the industry and recurring, I just don't see any inherent value to this company. So that ends the question and answers. To conclude this call, I have to say that I find it very disturbing the tone of emails that I've been receiving over the past few months. Everything from rampant anti-Semitism to downright physical threats of harm to my family. I'm an investor like everyone else. I'm a member of my community. I'm a loving father of two children. Assuming everyone is involved in the stock market for the same reason, we all want to make money. Therefore, it's important to listen to all criticisms of any company that you might have with an open ear. Just ask the shareholders of Enron, WorldCom, or more recently, the subprime lenders. Over the years, my email box has become filled with letters from investors who would only wish they read my newsletter before losing their money in specific stocks. And as always, cautious investing to all.
This call has now ended.